So maybe we can talk a little bit about what came out at the ASCO GU meeting as relates to M0 disease. One thing I did want to ask you, I don't know that much came out in terms of hormone-sensitive M0 disease, but I'm just curious how you go about treating patients with ADT for M0 disease, and specifically how and if you use intermittent therapy.
Right, so this really wasn't mentioned too much at this meeting, but it's a very big interest of mine. So in the M0 hormone sensitive space, the big question is when and if you should start ADT in the first place. There is very good evidence, in my opinion, that if the decision is made to start ADT in the non-metastatic biochemical recurrence setting, that it probably should be intermittent rather than continuous. And this was based on a number of randomized trials, including a large Canadian trial published in the New England Journal of Medicine about 4 or 5 years ago now. Dr. Juanita Crook was the first author, and Lawrence Klotz was the last author. In this study, they took patients with a biochemical recurrence, so M0 hormone sensitive, and they randomized them to a continuous ADT arm versus an intermittent ADT arm. And the threshold for starting the ADT was a PSA of 10.0. And if the patients reached a PSA of 10, in one group they started ADT and they continued for life. And in the other group, they received 8 months of therapy, they stopped the ADT, and then they waited until the PSA eventually rose back up to 10, and then they restarted 8 more months. And in that study, interestingly, the time to castration resistance and the time to death, the overall survival, was non-inferior. It was a non-inferiority study, so basically equivalent in lay terms. As a result of that study, most people's practice changed overnight, literally, and we now offered patients intermittent ADT, if at all, for that setting. So I think that's the best evidence to guide that decision.
I don't know if there have been any surveys done or if you have any sense of how often people do use intermittent ADT in the M0 situation. I would imagine that these people are getting treated both by urologists and medical oncologists. I would assume that intermittent therapy is used a lot, but you tell me.
I frankly haven't seen any published surveys. I have surveyed my peers, including urologists and oncologists. I would say that 80% to 90%, Neil, in the M0 biochemically recurrent space will use intermittent. The quality of life perspectives and effects are so much favorable, and the benefit of continuous ADT is simply not there, either from a delaying castration-resistant perspective or overall survival perspective. So I think the vast majority of people in the last 3 to 5 years have been using intermittent, frankly.
And when you do this, what is a typical scenario? What kind of symptoms does the man have at the time you stop the therapy? What typically happens as they get farther away from it? And how does that correlate with their testosterone levels? And do you measure them?
We typically use a 3-month formulation of LHRH agonists. So in my practice, Neil, it's not 100% evidence-based, but I typically use 6 months at a time instead of 8 months, which was done in the randomized trial. So what I typically do is I usually wait until the PSA is somewhere between 1 and 10, maybe with a median of 5, and I discuss that with the patient, and we pick a threshold that he's comfortable with. And when that threshold is reached, I typically give 2 3-month injections in succession, so a 6-month course of therapy. And in most patients, especially during the first, second, third cycles, the PSA drops dramatically and immediately, often to zero or very close to zero. And after the 6 months, I typically withdraw the hormone suppression. And depending on the man's age, it takes anywhere between 2 to 6 months for the testosterone to recover after they have stopped. So it doesn't recover overnight, and it recovers gradually. So after they stop the 6 months of therapy, it may take an additional 2 to 6 months after that for testosterone to recover. After testosterone increases above 100 nanograms per deciliter or 150 nanograms per deciliter, the PSA typically follows suit. It lags behind, but it starts to rise again. And then when testosterone is above 100 nanograms per deciliter, that is when people typically start feeling better. Their hot flashes go away, their energy comes back, their sexual desire may come back if they had any of that left, and they typically feel better within a few months of stopping.
And how long a time can you typically keep a man off therapy, and what's sort of the minimum and maximum that you've observed?
The minimum is about, 3 to 4 months, which is quite short. The maximum can be 2 years or longer. There are certainly patients that have a slow doubling time to begin with. So for that patient to go from 0 to 5 again, it may take, 2, 3, 4 years. There are other patients who have a doubling time of 2 months or 3 months who will reach that point of 5 very quickly.
So you mentioned that in both of these M0 scenarios, doubling time is a critical factor. But another factor that I hear people talking about is absolute PSA. How do you factor that in?
I totally agree with that. I think there's very little evidence in my mind to support using intermittent ADT even with a PSA less than 1. Once you go above 10, the risk of radiographic metastasis increases, so you're kind of defeating the purpose of trying to defer metastasis in the first place. So everybody has their own anecdotal thresholds or their own personal experience. As I said, typically I would not start intermittent ADT below a PSA of 1, and I typically would like to get it in before the PSA reaches 10, but I discuss it with every patient, and the average tends to be around 5, but that's just my personal experience.
So another issue, you mentioned intermittent ADT. I think it was Oliver Sartor brought up the issue of intermittent antiandrogens. Do you ever do that? And is there any evidence to support that?
Well, this is even more exploratory, and most physicians in the United States do not do that. So in many European countries, high-dose bicalutamide, so instead of 50 milligrams, giving 150 milligrams without an LHRH agonist or antagonist, was something that was done in the past. I must admit that in this country, this is very infrequently practiced in this way, and I typically do not do that, and I don't think we have any strong evidence to back that up, so I would sort of discourage that.